Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're on chapter 57. Does that sound right? And somewhat we've gone back and forth where we have the good prophecies or the bad prophecies. They're all really good. We have prophecies that talk about sad things and happy things and redemption. Part of what a prophet does is that he has to tell people when they're doing wrong, to warn people that one of the concepts of the Torah, a very strong concept, is, and the courts were never allowed to punish a person unless they were given a warning. So, for example, if somebody were lashed or somebody were stoned, or it almost had to be that there were two witnesses that they were warned, and the person had to acknowledge that they received the warning, and they were still going to plan on doing whatever that behavior was. So the prophets came to warn the people that Hashem wasn't happy with them. And so that's going to always be the message of a prophet, somewhat like Yonah, where he warned the city of Nineveh that their deeds were, they needed to do teshuvah. So here also, he's going to say a strong prophecy over here. The people in the land of Israel were on a downspin, meaning that there were earlier days where people were... It seems like, Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, in his dream was shown a vision of life as a ladder, where people are either going up or they're going down. And one of the ways in which we, today, is common to use today, it's hard to say about a person if they're righteous or they're not righteous, because who really knows? But if you want to compliment somebody, you say they're Ben Aliyah. They're a person who's on the way up. And there's just two kinds of people. There are those that are growing, or they're on their way up, and then there are other people that they're stagnated. They're on their way down. They're not. The people in the land of Israel were on their way down. What happened was they didn't totally wipe out the idol worship, the Gentiles that were worshiping idols in the land of Israel, and partially it came from the fact that we were sympathetic to them. There was plenty of room in the land, and we saw no reason to. It was hard to wipe out. Sometimes it involved women and children, to wipe out the seven nations. And the idolatry was so much part of their culture that there was no way to wipe out the idols and save the people. This was not. So small pockets of people that lived amongst the Jewish people had these idols, and they lived in our midst, and we were surrounded by people that worshipped idols, and we were also surrounded by foreign lifestyles, and sometimes these lifestyles appealed to people, and there was a slow movement towards idolatry and towards imitating the idols. And one of the things about idolatry, the Gemara says an interesting statement. In idolatry, there also was all kinds of other behaviors that were allowed, meaning that if a person wanted to worship idols, it wasn't just a religious experience. It meant that there were prostitutes there was alcohol and drugs, there was murder, they did human sacrifices, there were wild orgies. And all of the idols, that none of the idolaters were moral, so to speak. According to, if you look at what they did, it wasn't our value system at all. There were never any upstanding idolaters. It was part of the system was, if you when you're kids, you learn about Zeus and about this one and about that one, how they stole this one's wife and they had them more, they just bizarre, And as kids, we read about that and it almost sounds funny because it's so different from the kind of behaviors that we're used to today, but in those times, that's what they did. That's what idolatry was about. And if a person is an adolescent and they don't particularly like spending, you know, hours of devotion in synagogue and charity and good deeds, and the Gentiles, there's music and there's promiscuity and there's fun, and they're told it's a religious thing, and they're told they want to experience something, and so it was tempting. There were people that were interested in that sort of behavior. And there were some people that worshipped Hashem, but occasionally they went to the idols also. They had business partners, and they traveled, and so when in Rome, they did what the Romans do, and the Romans were idolaters. That was the... it slowly crept into the Jewish people. And there were kings that fought against it, and then there were kings that went along with it. They created Jewish idols. Sometimes they felt, well, if we can't fight it, let's create our own Jewish idols, and let's. And there were kings that brought idols into the Beis Hamikdash, and so that was what the prophets were fighting about, not fighting, were warning about. And so over here, Yeshayahu warns the people about this downspin that was happening. Now, when Hashem eventually was going to destroy the Beis Hamikdash, or was going to bring a tragedy upon the nation. Sometimes before that happens, the righteous get taken away. And there's different reasons for it. Sometimes it's a warning, you know, when a righteous person is taken. Right before World War II, the three greatest leaders in Europe passed away within 90 days. Chafetz Chaim and it was just like, all of a sudden, it was like we had all these leaders, and then, you know, within a very short amount of time, it was like a warning bell. Like, no, it was really scary. Like, the people felt like Hashem was sending them a message, but nobody, even in their worst nightmare, realized what was about to happen. There is an idea sometimes the righteous people are taken so they don't have to see what's going to happen afterwards. Sometimes righteous people are taken and they make an atonement for us. That's one of the things that you say in a funeral, like that, you know, they should go up on high and, you know, stick up for us, you know, help us out. Sometimes when the righteous people are taken, it's a shock, and it's supposed to shock us into becoming better. It's supposed to, there's the opportunity when good people leave the world to grab onto some of that goodness. There's an idea that when people are alive, they create certain positive forces. And when they pass on, those forces are there for the taking, so to speak, for other people. Almost the same way when a person has, let's say, a business, and they pass away, someone else can take over the business. So when good people are alive, they do lots of mitzvahs. And when they pass on, that spiritual energy can be given over to others, and especially their disciples and to other people. And sometimes when people pass away, and this is sometimes true of a mother or a father or other relatives are able to carry on certain things that they were passed down in certain ways from those relatives that they never imagined themselves doing. They never imagined themselves, but they're able to tap into that energy, so to speak. So ideally, when a righteous person passes away, we study that person. We try to see what they did and how. They call it their Yerusha, so there's their inheritance. How can we keep up the inheritance of those righteous people? How can we make sure the things they stood for keep on going? Individually, when a person has a yahrzeit, when they remember the death of a loved one, that's what they're supposed to tap into, is how can we keep their memory alive? How can we continue the good things that this person stood for? How can I do something that would be a merit for them? So that's the proper way to do it. But unfortunately, sometimes good people die and nobody notices. They don't think about it. And that's what he says over at Tzadikov. A righteous person passes away. The ein ish samalev. Nobody thinks about it. Nobody pays any attention. That's the real tragedy. You know, they had a righteous person and nobody even, it didn't bother anybody. They don't miss that person. They didn't use that opportunity. Now you have righteous people, and then you have also people of good deeds. Anshei Chesed. Wasn't that the name of the synagogue for a while in Atlanta? Anshei Chesed?
I think it still is.
Oh, it still is? It still is? Okay.
Morning. Jews.
What was the old name? Didn't they have an old name? I think they're called Kehillah now.
No, that's different. Kehillah, I think, is in Sandy Springs somewhere on Roswell Road.
I think they took over Anshei Chesed.
Did they?
I believe so. I believe they're the new Anshei Chesed. I think Anshei Chesed is the old name.
What was that? Think Fard? Anshei Sfard.
There was Anshei Sfard, too.
But I met someone, since Kehillah was formed, I met someone who said she went to Anshei Chesed, I think.
I'm not sure. I had thought Anshei Chesed was, they changed their name to Kehillah to attract the young people or something. But either way, Anshei Chesed is a nice name. Kehillah is a nice name. Anshei Chesed means people of kindness. A tzaddik is almost a person that's won the battle already, where they, you know, most of us, we Rosh Hashanah, there's a picture that there's good deeds and bad deeds, and we hope the majority of the time the good side wins, we're human, right? And so a tzaddik is someone who's already won the battle, so to speak, or who's already, the vast majority of the time they do the righteous, you know, they're righteous. Most of us, we're still struggling. We can't say we're a tzaddik. We'd like to be. But at least we can be Anshei Chesed. We can be people of kindness. We can't say we've won the battle, but we can be people that are always doing good deeds, always doing kindness, always helping others. So he mentions too, he said those people, the righteous people, again, there are people that have been on the good side so much that they earn the title tzaddik, you know, that they are righteous. And then there are other people that are just good people. Anshei Chesed. And you know what? They also, Nesafim, they're gathered. It's an interesting expression. They describe death as being gathered. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, same word is used for harvesting. Like, almost like they've accomplished things in life, and now it's time to go back to Hashem. It's like they're gathered. It's just an interesting word for death. But it's used in the Chumash. It says that many times a person is gathered to his people. You would have said they're taken away. You know, in English, you know, he was taken away. That's not a Hebrew, that's not a Jewish expression. Nobody's taken away. We don't lose anybody. In fact, the opposite, they're gathered. They come back to their ancestors, and they're gathered. It's a whole different concept. Really.
In my translation, it says taken away.
Oh, yours does? Okay. In the Hebrew, the word asaf, the same word like an asifa is a gathering. Or to harvest is called to osef, to... Oh, mine also says taken away. How do you like that? I didn't even notice that. Oh. Okay. But the Hebrew is Anshei Chesed Nesafin, that they're gathered. Mine quotes, it says in the Torah by Aaron, it uses that word, by Aaron, that he was gathered when he died. It says, Yesaf Aaron. That's the... okay. But anyway, Be'ein Maven. But nobody thinks about it. In other words, when somebody passes away, it's not supposed to be like, you know, ho-hum, somebody died and life goes on as usual. It's supposed to be a shock. It's supposed to be a time of contemplation. It's supposed to be a time of thinking about, you know, what that person stood for and how the legacy is going to be continued. And is Hashem sending us a message? Now, if all the righteous people are taken, then he's definitely... sending us a message. Right before the flood, when in the times of Noah, Methuselah died, and that was it. Once he died, it was time to, you know, no more good people around. It was time to bring the flood. Kivnei hara, because of the evil times that were coming, ne'asaf atzadik, the righteous was gathered. So that's the people weren't thinking about the message that Hashem was sending them. That itself is a tragedy, because here they were given a warning and they weren't noticing it. Yavo b'shalom. Now, he talks about those righteous people that go, they are going to a better place, so to speak, or they are coming in peace. Yavo b'shalom. Yenuchal mishkavam, and they are going to rest on their resting place, meaning that they've accomplished what they've accomplished, they've done their good things. We're not crying. The tragedy isn't for the people that have died. The tragedy is for those of us that are alive without that person anymore. That's also a different focus. Sometimes people, they cry for the person that passed away as if, you know, the person that passed away, you know, they're in a better place. If they were a good person, then you see that today. Sometimes people call it a celebration, or the, but they're wrong in a sense that it's not. It is a sad day because it's sad for the rest of us. We no longer have that person who was a treasure; is not in our midst anymore. But that person is going to go. Should go in peace and should go to their resting place. Holach nechochu, and they are going upright. But what happens to the people, the bad people? What are they doing? So now he describes in the very strong words have their effect, and he says, "Va'atem, and you, kivu henu, you should pay attention, you should listen, you should come near." And then he says, "What do the people stand for? Bnei onana, zer menoyef fitizna, the society were people that were becoming immoral. They were children of." It could be sorcery, meaning like the witchcraft that was common in those days. This word is in the Torah, onanim. It was a form of seances, it's almost like society was based on immoral behavior. What's scary is that our society has become that way in the United States. At one time, it was a lot more moral, or what people expected was a lot stronger. And now people grow up in society where people no longer have our old Jewish values of being, you know, of morality and of what's proper. And there's a certain, the definition of marriage has changed, but even more so, people aren't getting married. They don't have a sense of loyalty, and so in the Ten Commandments, there were two tablets, two sets of lukos, and there's some of the mitzvahs are between man and man, and some of the mitzvahs are between man and God. So one of the mitzvahs between man and man is do not commit adultery. That's opposite. Do not worship strange gods. We see life is a partnership, and our soulmate is Hashem, and then sometimes we have our spouse. And just like if a person is disloyal to Hashem, he worships a strange god, a person who's in a marriage is disloyal to the marriage if they're not loyal to their spouse. They're adultery and idolatry are really the very similar type of sin. And so the people here, they're doing sorcery, which is strange gods, and then it leads to immoral behavior. It's no coincidence that part of idolatry was immoral behavior. And that was what they used to interest people in the idolatry, was to be able to have freedom to commit immoral behavior. But there was no sense of loyalty. There was no sense of partnership. And so... And why did people do that? And so what he says is that the people were interested in almita agnu. People wanted to just enjoy themselves. They wanted to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? That's the. But it's more than that. The word ta'agn means like just enjoyment. Almita chivu. And he describes he says, like, who do you open wide? Like, the people wanted to, they didn't want to be confined to one spouse or to one God. They wanted all these experiences, and they opened their mouth. Olatem yudei pesha, you are children of sins, zera shakir, and a seed of falsehood. This whole concept of not being loyal and of being part of a society that only looks at a person's pleasure, that doesn't that was the sin of his times. Verse 5. And usually people have a certain shame that they don't do things in public, but if they do things in public, it means they don't care. And again, that you see that now, things that people would have never done in public. You can walk in public and you see unbelievable things going on. And there's no shame. Not only in public, you know, people do things and they post it on the internet for the whole world to see. They do selfies, you know, they take a picture and they're proud of it, you know. People would have, where's their sense of privacy or of shame? But and that's what he's saying happened to his generation, is that people would do it underneath the trees. Now, it could be he's talking about immoral behavior, or it could be they worshipped idols. But again, it went hand in hand. Now, it was underneath every tall tree, because the Gentiles, one of the famous idols in their days was the trees. That's where the Christmas trees came from. They used the trees to worship. That was a certain types of tree worship. Shokta Yeladim. And it mentions that they killed their kids. Now, there were people that did children sacrifice. That was a famous idol where they would sacrifice their kids. It also enabled them to be immoral, because then they wouldn't have to worry about getting pregnant, because they could kill the kids. They wouldn't have to raise them. In other words, the fact that if people couldn't do that and they had children, they'd have to raise those children. But if they could kill the children, then that would solve that problem. Some people learn that if people don't have a loyalty and a commitment to a spouse, they're killing their kids, because how do you raise children like that, where they out of wedlock, where there's no the father or the mother, they're just accidental partners? How do you raise a child where the parents aren't committed to each other, and they're not committed to having a child, and this child just happened to be of some, you know, they're killing that child. They're shoftei yeladim. They're killing their kids. That's not a way to commit to the future, to raise a child out, you know, just random like that. So that's what's described here. Tachas siva, underneath the rocks. Now, there does seem to be, it's not so clear what he was referring to, something about these smooth stones. Don't know if that was the kind of idol that they had. Some of the people used stones for idols. They set up stones. He mentions over here something about smooth stones. Verse 6. Bechelke nachal chelke heim gorelecha. Your portion is in the rivers, in these stones. Gam lehem shafakte. And they spilled blood to these stones, and they spilled to these idols. Halisa minchus al eila enochim. It was apparently a very bad kind of religion, the ones that did to these stones. Verse 7, Al Hargavoa, there was other ones that went up to the mountaintops. And again, we don't have these exact religions, these exact times, but the people committed their sins, or they were immoral on the highest mountaintops and in the most bizarre places. Samti Mishkavek, they lied down on the mountaintops. We usually see a mountain as a place to climb, to aspire to, great people, you see instead the great people are immoral. People like presidents, or people like who you expect more from, the mountaintops are, that's where they themselves are very immoral. Gam sham olus lizvayach zevach, and they offer offerings. Verse 8. V'acha adelat ha-mezuzah samti zichonech. And they do things behind closed doors, behind the mezuzah. It's almost like the mezuzah should be there to keep a person straight, and then behind the mezuzah and behind the door, look what they do. Kim iti galisi. It almost describes like from behind Hashem, they worshipped Hashem. They had a mezuzah on their door, and then they went up and they worshipped the idols. Or it's almost like they made room in their place where they slept for other partners. He's describing a very strong immoral behavior. And verse 9, one of the idols they had was called Molech. Either Molech or Melech, this would be to the, he said, like you're bringing a gift to the king. The tarbi rechuchayach, and you're offering perfume with the tishalchi tzirayach, and you're sending messengers ad merochok. People would go on exotic trips and do all kinds of serve. Some people say that they went to the Gentile kings. They looked to the Gentile kings. They held them up as heroes. The tashbil ad sha'ol. And it led him to the grave. It led him to the wrong kind of behavior. Verse 10. Barov darchech, and all their traveling. There are other people that want to travel the world, and they almost live for travel. It's because they know that they haven't found what they want, and they need to travel to find it. But they almost, they've created, there are people that live till they can retire and travel, and then they that's like a goal in life, is to travel. It's interesting, like some people have a goal like to visit all 50 states, or to do, why? Because it's there, you know, and it's just it's such a funny thing. They're traveling because they're bored, because their life has no meaning. It's okay to travel to see the, you know, Hashem's beautiful world and this and that, or I don't have anything against that, but the people are traveling instead of building something meaningful. They're just traveling. So barov darkech yagata, in all their ways they're wearing themselves. Lo marti noish chayes yudecha, and they don't say they're not looking for Hashem, or they found Hashem. Al kein lo chalisa, and therefore the people were stricken. They've gone on the wrong path. And who did you, when you got in trouble, who did you hope for? Who were you afraid of? Who did you reject? And v'osi lo zecharti, and you didn't remember me. Lo samti alibech, and you didn't put it on your heart. Halo ani mechosh, he's referring to Hashem. And Hashem, like, you know, Hashem sits back. And people have freedom in their lives, and they go on these exotic trips, and they have this immoral behavior, and they worship these strange gods. And again, it exists in our society today. Like I think, could be it always existed, but it's more in the open now. You read about it on blogs. And they don't think about Hashem. Verse 12. Ani agid tzidkaseich. I will talk about your good things, or I would like to talk about your good things. That's masecha v'lo ye'ilucha, and I try to. Hashem has tried to encourage you, but it's not helping. So what's going to happen? In other words, the people have rejected Hashem; they're leading a different kind of lifestyle, and inevitably it'll lead them to trouble, and then they will call out. So Hashem says, what's going to happen is, bezachek, when you call out, yatzir kevusecha, do you think the idols that you've, or the lifestyle that you have, it's not going to help you? And people have led these types of lives, and then they get older, and they realize that they don't have meaningful community, or friends, or stand for anything, and they call out, and the types of things they had, it's like a wind. It's like a breath. It's like nothingness. That's kulam yisa ruach. It's carried by the wind. Yikach hevel. It's taken by like hot air. Vachosa bi yamcha eret yirish har kachi. And these people are not going to be the ones that lead the good life and inherit the holy mountain. So this half of it is a description of the sins of the generation. Now he's going to talk about the way back. In other words, there's always the first step is to recognize that something wrong has taken place, that a person is misleading themselves, that a person is fooling themselves, that a certain thing is wrong. After a person recognizes that, so then what are the steps to come back? So guess what's the Haftorah for Yom Kippur morning? That's it. This is it. It's very interesting, too, because it starts right here in verse 14. In other words, we don't read the first half about how bad everything is, and maybe that would be the wrong. We'd get it. You know, Yom Kippur alone, we don't need that. We're all, you know, collectively, we know when Yom Kippur comes around that it's serious. You know, it's like the question is the path back. How do you find your way back? What's the, once we've sinned, or once we live in this lifestyle that's led us on this path where we, you know, followed, you know, indulgence or the, what's the way out? So this is where the Yom Kippur Haftorah begins on verse 14. One of the things, I think, I don't know if it's in that art scroll, in the other, they always tell you when there's a Haftorah. Some of the books will.
Mine is this year.
Oh, yours says too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why this one doesn't. That's a good thing just to know that it's.
Mine has a little footprint there, and it says Haftorah Yom Kippur.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Very good. So let's see how people find their way out. So he says the following, V'yomer, Solu, Solu. He says, remove. Panek, clear out the way. So when they wanted to make a road, you have to kind of picture to make a path. Let's say you have, you know, here in Tocco Hills they have what they call shortcuts, like in between one street and another. And so what's the problem? When you cut through an area, you've got like stones and you've got tree trunks, and it's easy to trip or not. So if you want to clear a path, you have to remove the stones. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of smooth things over. You have to fix the way. So the first step is to remove the stones, the things that you trip on. So if a person sins, stumbles, so they have to remove the stumbling blocks. What is it that makes them go astray? What is it that leads them away? So you have to remove those things. If you know when you go certain places, you do things that you're not proud of, so don't go to those places. If you know that certain people, when you hang around with them, they bring out certain behaviors, and so you stay away from them. You have to remove those stones, remove those stumbling blocks. In other words, clear a path. That's the first step. Sometimes there's a lot of little rocks to remove, like little stones. You have a very rocky ground, so you have to slowly, you know, the first step is to remove those rocks, to get rid of those pebbles, like clear away. Sometimes a person has to make a road leading to somewhere. In other words, they're like treading water. They're not going anywhere. So they have to clear a path. They have to make a route to get where they want to go. Well, I want to study more. The Chofetz Chaim talks about this. That we say in our prayers, you know, like we ask Hashem to enlighten our eyes in Torah, but you never open up a book. So how can you ask Hashem to give us Torah if you never study, you know, or you never go to a class, or you never try to? Well, you can ask Hashem to make you as wise as you want, but you have to be willing to at least open a book or go to a class or try to pay attention when they read the Torah or the. So you have to make a path. You have to make a way that it can work. So you need to salu. You need to clear away the stones, and then you need to make a path that you're going somewhere, that you have a way to get where you want to go. And harima miksho mederek ami, and remove the stumbling blocks. Figure out what prevents you from reaching your goals. What is it that stops you from going where you want to go? Verse 15, Ki ko amar Hashem, thus says Hashem, and this is what Hashem says. This is a focus. So Hashem Himself, is to be holy and to be separate. Ram v'nisa shochenad, Hashem dwells on high. There's a holiness and a separateness. V'kadoshmo, and there's a feeling of holiness. It's an interesting thing. Some people, they ask, what's holy? It's hard to describe it, but a person can feel a certain purity when they do the right things, or when they around certain people. There's a sense of holiness. There's a sense. Holiness is that there's also a sense when something disgusts a person that it's not holy. There's a human sense when these people are behaving like animals. I don't want to be part of this. You know, you see that, you know, and then there are other times where a person senses holiness. They sense that this is special, this is unique, this is elevating. So Hashem is an elevating thing. It brings out a greatness in a person. It brings out a separateness. Now, one of the things that it also does, what is the way that Hashem wants us to be? And so Hashem loves humility. Hashem loves the people that are humble. Vesdaka yushfal ruach. Hashem is looking for the people that Hashem dwells with. Hashem, what is holy? Holy doesn't mean about being arrogant. It doesn't mean about bragging. It doesn't mean about people that step on others. Hashem loves people that are humble, that are... it describes mishval ruach. It's a person that doesn't have airs about them. That's the people that Hashem dwells with. And what is our goal? L'hacha yos ruach shvalim, to pick people up. Our goal in life, our holiness comes from being able to pick others up, to lift people up. That they're people that are shuffle, are low down, to be able to pick them up. L'hacha yos Lev Nedavim, and people who sometimes they're not physically need a pickup, but spiritually they need a pickup. And so we'll stop here because it's. But you could see how, like, you know, first he talked about the sins, and so people hear and they're thinking, "Oh my God, is there any hope?" And then he starts building the picture of what a person has to do, how they have to arrive at teshuva. And so, again, it's a very appropriate message for, like, Yom Kippur morning, the path of teshuva.
Okay. Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.